Well, thank you, Professor Walton, for sharing those deep insights into the debate that's taking place at the moment and in the world in which we're living. It shows that materialism, the belief that there is only the material world around us and not a God, seems to be becoming a lot more dominant. Now, are there questions that you have that you'd like to put to the professor? We have a roving mic if you'd like to put up your hand. Yes.
Three points or three questions, if I may.
Could we just take one at a time, please? Thank you.
Okay. The first one, your illustration of the children and the selection of the orange card and the peer pressure, surely that is also true or could be true of creationists within the Christian church at large. Fear of the pastor, fear of the bishop, fear of the hierarchies within the church. I fear that your illustration was a little one-sided.
I told you I was giving a Christian perspective, but I think I should remind you that...
Is it the microphone working?
This is on. Can people hear me?
Oh, okay, it's on now.
It's on now, is it?
Yeah.
Can people hear me now?
Yeah,
I think I should remind you, however, that I certainly learned nothing but evolution in school. That's what I've been taught in school. There are almost... there may be a handful of schools, including Muslim academies in the UK, that teach a bit of creationism, but the vast majority of state schools teach nothing whatsoever except evolutionism. Furthermore, the media, I would say, never do anything except ridicule creationism, and that's why I made the illustration the way it is. I mean, logically, what you say is correct. Yes, it could work the other way as well, but I'd say most of us have been conditioned to think in the other way, and almost all the peer groups we meet in our society are evolution-based peer groups who are bringing the pressure on us to conform.
Thank you. Can I take another question over here and then come back, Mike, to further questions if we have time?
Thank you. Can I just comment about the Drosophila experiment which you quoted, maybe following on from this gentleman's comment, but at university I remember being in biology, doing the Drosophila experiment, never getting the answer that we should have got, but we always put the answer down that they wanted in our paper, so we got passed. So it is a wee bit of a peer pressure, but I just wanted to comment on that. When you put it up, it took me back to my university days of things.
Very interesting indeed. I didn't know that, but because I'm not a biologist, but thank you for that insight.
It's a time-honored practice of students, I
think. Could be, yes.
Could you introduce your name, please, as you ask a question?
Hi, my name's Brian Calder. You walked us through 500 million years from the post-Cambrian of things appearing and disappearing, mm-hmm. and evolution would argue that there's a logical sequence over those 500 million years. Mm-hmm. Having sought to say absolute nonsense, no intermediate species, no tic-tac-licks, no history of whales, horses, why do these new things pop into place? Why do they disappear? Because if there's not evolution, presumably there's a celestial presence, a third party, a time traveller, a spaceman, coming in and whipping something down or zapping something out. So you didn't really produce a satisfactory indication of what you think the alternative is.
Yes.
Not, let me just qualify that, because I know what you think the alternative is, as God is in Genesis. But if it's not over 6 days, if it's spread over 500 million years, instead of doing it in 1 hour, God keeps sort of popping up and thinking, yeah, I don't like that. Oh, I'll have one of those. You understand what I'm saying?
I do, and it's a very good question. The problem is, you know, evolution is an enormous subject, origins is an enormous subject, and I simply could not cover everything like that in a 1 hour's lecture. I'm sure I've bored lots of people quite a lot, even with what I have dealt with. So that is a very big topic. Now, first of all, I don't think there's anything sacrosanct about the 500 million years since the Cambrian strata. I hinted at that when I showed you the fresh meat of the Tyrannosaurus rex and the ink sac in the in the squid fossil that's turned up from Wiltshire. Are these things really 500 million years old? Evolutionists, geologists believe they are because of the radioactive dating methods, which give long dates like this. But again, there's nothing sacrosanct about the radioactive dating methods. They're only as good as the presumptions on which they're based. And one presumption on which they're based is that the amount of the daughter element when the rock was laid down was zero. If that is not so, then the dates that you're getting from the radioactive dating methods aren't right. There's lots of contrary evidence as well. Even radioactive dating evidence is coming in now, in that radiocarbon dating is a different radioactive method, which is based on a different principle altogether. The half-life of radiocarbon is about 5,700 years. Now, if you take 10 half-lives... Yes.
Are you saying that there's still a long period of time and this chap is coming in and out, this intelligent designer?
No.
Is coming in and out?
No.
So
it
all happened at once?
I think it all happened in a very short space of time, yes. Yes.
Fine, thank you.
Okay. Could I just mention that the radiocarbon method, which should only show dates back to about 100,000 years maximum, everything should be radiocarbon dead beyond that. When they test, for example, coal seams that are 300 million years old, the radiocarbon is still there, and they get dates of about 30,000 years, uncorrected dates of about 30,000 years, using radiocarbon. Although, for example, uranium lead or potassium argon or something like that gives a 300 million year age. So which are we to believe, radiocarbon or the other radioactive dating methods? There's a lot of problems with the dating methods. You never hear about these in the media or in the literature, but it's not cut and dried by a long way.
So all these creatures all appear, all the fossils of all these things are no longer around. Oh, sorry to keep you running up and down. They were all produced at the same time but died out very quickly, which doesn't really make sense as an intelligent designer thoughtfully planning things out.
Well,
we have these fossils.
You are second-guessing the intelligent designer there, aren't you? I mean, a designer, a god, can do what he wants. And who are we to say, no, you shouldn't have done it that way, or you should have done it this way?
Contrary of that, and then I will shut up, I promise, and give somebody else a go, is that you're assuming that that's the way it was done. So you're making a big guess that can't be substantiated.
It's not so much a big guess as it's if you take inspiration alongside of science, then there is backup in scripture for that kind of an approach.
5/7 of the world don't agree with scripture, and now I will shut up because I've had more than my share.
Okay.
But you may answer that point.
I didn't catch what he said.
What I said is 5/7 of the world don't accept the Genesis story because they're not Christian.
Yes. Yeah, well, are you excluding Muslims then? Because they have their creation story, which is very similar. And it's probably more Muslim schools in the UK are teaching creationism than Christian ones.
Okay. There's another questioner over there.
Thank you. Could you briefly comment on time and distance, i.e. stars, seeing them through telescopes at great distance, light years, etc.?
I don't know much about that. I don't claim to be an astronomer at all. I've read some articles in which there are completely different theories of the origin of the universe. I mean, non-Big Bang theories of the origin of the universe, in which there are various things like time dilation and so on. I can't remember the details of the articles, but believe me, there are alternative explanations in the literature, although I'm not familiar with them and can't answer that question at this point in time. I mean, you can believe, if you wish, that the designer created the stars with the beams of light to the earth intact. So, you know, the whole system was created in one vast go with all the beams of light and everything else intact. That's a possibility. I mean, it's no more far-fetched than the multiverse hypothesis, which is out there as well. But there are other theories, which, again, I've read, but I'm not conversant with, that can provide some kind of a rationale for why stars can apparently be billions of light years away, or billions of years away, I should say. Yeah.
This question at the front here.
It strikes me, it's always struck me as interesting that the...
Could you just wait for the microphone? Thank you.
The evolutionists attempt to show, and perhaps do show, that God isn't necessary. But no way have I seen they show that God cannot or does not exist. And in my view, I put this question, which is quis custodiet ipsos custodes, in other words, who created the laws of physics and chemistry? How did it all start? The idea they didn't evolve, because there was nothing there. They all started. And the fact that what we might call other worlds existed was, in a sense, shown by when we found all the antiparticles, which hadn't been suspected that there could be antiparticles. Then it turned out we'd have a whole a whole lot of antiparticles, the same kind but opposite properties to our particles. So it seems to me there's a hell of a lot there out that isn't easily susceptible to merely the evidence you have in front of you, the physical evidence. So that, as I say, I don't think, I may be wrong in this, but I don't think even the great proponent of evolution, Dawkins, denies. He denies the need for a God, but he does not in any way show the non-existence of a God.
Yes.
And I think that's quite an important...
Yes. Yes, you've made a very good point there, and I agree wholeheartedly with what you say. The... A number of physicists have come to the same conclusion. Where did the laws of physics come from in the first place? And several of them have published very interesting books, like The Goldilocks Enigma. I think that's by Paul Davis, which makes a similar point that that you're making. There are several other books in the same line, pointing out the fine-tuning that they found for the cosmological constants that exist in the universe. Why are they so incredibly finely tuned? And in their books, they claim that this is another evidence, a powerful evidence for design, another one. When evolutionary physicists and scientists think about it, they usually appeal to the multiverse hypothesis, so that the laws of physics that we have are simply one of an innumerable number of different laws of physics. They didn't really come from anywhere. Every kind of law of physics and chemistry and so on, it does really exist out there in these multiple universes which are being born all the time in space.
Yes, we only discover.
Yes.
We don't
Well, we can't discover them. They're undetectable. But not many scientists are satisfied with... Dawkins, for example, refers to the multiverse hypothesis on several occasions. But it's not a very satisfactory explanation, because, you know, science seeks for the simplest explanation. It's Occam's razor. And here we are appealing to this immense multiplication of whole universes. I mean, you can believe, you can predict anything whatsoever if there are multiple universes out there. So it's not got much explanatory power. Scientists are not very happy with the multiverse explanation.
The other thing which makes me a little dissatisfied with creationism, there's no morality. Morality does not exist in this. Nobody is sorry for a species that died out.
Yes. Yes, well, I could go on about that for quite a while. I was just reading an article in the Times only this week. Perhaps you saw it. It was a review of a book. And am I going on too much?
It would be good to repeat the question. And then I think we're going to have to wind up shortly.
Okay.
But I know there is another questioner at the back. So if you can make a brief comment, and then we'll go on to the next...
If I just make a brief comment. This article in the Times pointed to Do you remember there were two young men, Harris and Sebold, who went into a school in Columbine in the USA and shot various of their colleagues. Now, they were wearing T-shirts which said natural selection on them, and their websites were and their writings are covered in support for evolutionism and the belief that because society is protecting the weak, is looking after those who are handicapped and disabled in various ways, evolution is going off course. And they were trying to even up the balance. And then in Finland, there was a similar case of a young man, I think his name was Orvinen or something like that. And he was just the same. When he was carrying out his crime, he took his pistol and he pointed it at the head of some people, and some people he shot and some people he didn't shoot. And he was saying he wanted to make society a place that people could be proud of. He wanted to eliminate the weak and put evolution back on its course. So he paused, and if he took in his judgment the idea that person is fit to survive, he didn't shoot, whereas if he thought this person is not fit to survive, he shot them. So I mean that's not the morality that Darwin stood for. That's not the morality that's being taught in our schools. I'm not trying to say that, but that is what some people are deducing from it.
Thank you very much. A question at the back.
Yes, Duncan Brown. Are you familiar with the work of Dr. Vanessa Hill?
Dr.
Vanessa Hill?
No.
I commend you to look, and everybody here, to look at their website, which is naturescode.org, which categorically proves the divine presence in everything, and mathematically proved by some very eminent people at Cambridge, America, and across the world.
Could you give us that name again?
Naturescode.org.
And who was the lady?
Dr. Vanessa Hill.
Okay, thank you. It sounds very interesting.
And one other point. I did some work near Jeddah last year and found, to my amazement, there is a tomb just outside Jeddah, which is 400 feet long, which reputedly contains the body of Eve.
Okay.
Well, that's going to need some verification. If we had some DNA from Eve, maybe we could do it.
There's a question here.
One thing which concerns me is Darwinism is referred to so frequently. As a chemist myself, and respecting your background and current work in chemistry, if Darwin had been a chemist, I think this year would have gone with him being totally unnoticed. That's the way of chemistry. However, Darwin this year is preeminent. But I wonder, should these arguments not be moving forwards? Should the discussion not be much more about evolutionary arguments, good or bad, true or false, or valid or invalid, in the 21st century? Why are we hearing so much of ancient science rather than current science in Darwinian evolutionism?
Yeah, I think, again, you make a very pertinent point there. If you look at Jerry Coyne's book or Richard Dawkins's latest book, The Greatest Show on Earth, it's all the same stuff that's being recycled over and over again. One thing that might move things forward is to find out what the limits of evolution are. I mean, I've got no problem with natural selection, mutations and natural selection, giving rise to microevolution, and most creationists agree with that. So where are the limits? How far does evolution go? Where does evolution end, and where does design begin? I mean, that's one possible way forward. Michael Behe published a book called The Edge of Evolution. It's a bit of a technical book, but he is starting to move in that direction. But he's an intelligent designer, so everything he says tends to be discounted by the real biological world, the academic biological world. Yes, there are lots of things that could be done and should be done.
Okay, thank you. One final question at the back there.
Just a couple of things. One, to pick up on what Mike was saying there, I think you know, Darwin was 200 years ago. I think in my line of work, the knowledge that was present 200 years ago has been completely superseded by new and more interesting knowledge. We can do things now that we had no idea even existed back then. And I'd like to see the debate come on. We've kind of seen it a little bit polarized here. If you're a Darwinist, then you're this. If you're a creationist, then you're that. My personal view as a member of this church and as a scientist and a Christian is that there's a lot of room for ambiguity in Genesis 1. It's much more fun trying to figure out some new and interesting way of looking at this rather than rehashing all the old dogma. And on the way to that, I would thoroughly recommend The Goldilocks Enigma, Paul Davis's book. That is an excellent book about some seriously big ideas and a really good introduction to mind-expanding science, I think.
Yes, thank you. Yes, I thoroughly agree. It's the problem with the forbiddenness that's the hindrance. And if you're in biology or if you're in geology and you show any interest in intelligent design or creationism, you're out in no time. And I'm sorry. I'm very sorry that happens. I think, you know, science should be objective. Science should be tolerant. We should be objective. We should be tolerant. We should be willing to listen to any ideas. And what you say about different interpretations of Genesis, I also thoroughly agree with. We don't know everything there either. So lots more tolerance, much less of the forbidden aspect of things is what I would say.
And with that plea for an open discussion within the scientific community as well as within the Christian community about this whole issue, I think we will end our debate tonight by thanking you all very much for coming along, and especially thanking Professor John Walton for this excellent presentation.